Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. Welcome, everybody, to the Top Chef wrap-up, roundup, judges. Convening?
It's a convening.
Yeah.
It's never been more convenient for us to convene. So.
Honestly, this, like, I'm not even kidding. As soon as we ended last week, I was like, well, I guess I'm just counting down the hours till the next one. Because I've got nothing going on right now.
Yeah, because I could ask, like, what's new? How's everything going?
No, you know what's new? I bought The Sims online for $5, and I have been doing nothing since. Ethan is getting very concerned, which is fair and reasonable. Anyway, I'm Haley Strong. This is not Haley's depression podcast. This is indeed the Top Chef Roundup table. Anyway, because he talked first, Josh Wiggler is here. I almost called you Josh Fox. Wow, I am losing it.
Please do.
Josh Fox.
It's always the best part of my day. Well, I guess not anymore because it's not really happening. But in the past when we would regularly go to pharmacies and such.
For all my medications.
Yes, I would go and I would pick up a medication for Emily Fox from time to time, and they would give me the medication, and they would say, well, have a great day, Mr. Fox. And I would smile and look at them and say, you know, I will. I always loved being Mr. Fox.
Yeah, so. I keep trying to convince Ethan he should take my name in marriage. And
he'd be strong.
Yeah, choice. Ethan Strong sounds amazing, right? Anyway, he's not going for it. But whatever. Next to Josh, literally and figuratively, is Emily Fox. She's great. Yeah, welcome here.
Hi.
It's a good choice.
So those medications, you know, no, I'm just kidding.
Let's judge right you now, for your medication.
Yeah. Show me the list. No,
post it on Instagram.
And also here today, Antonio Mazzaro. What's up, Antonio? What have you been up to?
I've been just fervently hitting refresh on my podcast app for the next ep of Haley's Depression Podcast.
Nobody wants to listen to that.
I kind of do.
It's about the 1920s, right? Early 1930s, isn't that what it is?
Not quite. Okay.
It's the 2020s, though, but it works.
Oh, so it's about my 20s, sure. But.
Lots of 20s.
And also here is Kurt Clark. You know, I've got something to say quick first.
I'll just sit here quietly and download the latest episode of Strong Feelings.
Please.
Damn, perfect name.
Wow.
So we're like recording this sort of on video, and everybody has beige walls. Like Antonio's and Kurt's are almost the exact same color.
Yeah. And they're almost lined up here. Let me see if I can Actually, they're just opposite.
So the video for this will never be released. So that is a strictly podcast thing. Yeah. Sorry about that, everyone. Kurt, what's
up? If you're $1,000 patron to specifically the Top Chef podcast, doesn't count if it's RHAP. Only if you're spending $1,000 per podcaster. So you're talking at a bare minimum this week of $5,000. That's how you'll get the video. Otherwise,
let us know. I would.
I'm good for that. I'll definitely post video for that.
If you are one of those patrons, throw yourself off a balcony.
Oh my God, Antonio! At least let's get the money first.
I am great, Haley. To answer your question.
I'm so glad to hear it.
Nothing more fun than getting a list of restaurants I really want to visit.
I know,
but really can't.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Emily watched this first. She watched this before I did, and you were like, "Be prepared to be like very sad watching this episode."
I cried.
They basically did a restaurant crawl in front of us.
Yeah,
which feels bad at this moment.
Yeah.
Although I did look up several of them, and several of them I could drive across town and grab, to-go orders from. So it is on me, but none of these were in the valley, and most are like a good half hour drive for me. In this traffic, it might be 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Like LA is free and easy right now.
And on me is like that sandwich with sliced carrots and pate and all that
pork roll, which was also my college
Taylor ham.
Oh my god!
It was the big restaurant showdown. I mean, not restaurant wars. This was like restaurant.
No, this felt nicer than restaurant wars.
Yeah.
But this felt like a beautiful love letter to the food scene of LA, which I don't think really gets talked about enough. As somebody who does not live close to LA nor in the country it resides, oftentimes you think of you hear LA being characterized as this kind of a weird place where it's like only celebrities and plastic surgeons and vegetarians. And this episode really proved that that's not the case. There is such a wide variety of wonderful restaurants, 101 of them to be exact. There is no more than that.
That's all that they've got. No, but it was really it was really lovely to get that tour. And I think a really smart choice. I think one of the things that we knocked Top Chef Kentucky over, Antonio, was that like they didn't really like stress like Kentucky. Like they didn't really put that so front and center early on, I think, like culturally. I think like this week we got like a real snapshot of the food scene in LA, and to put that here in like episode two as opposed to like last year, was it literally episode three that they did Restaurant Wars last year? I think it was like pretty much that early. Like rather than getting so deep into like the game and like, let's shake up the game of Top Chef. They really leaned hard into the culture of the place that Top Chef is filming this year. I thought that was a really, really smart idea.
It helps that we don't have to spend a lot of time getting to know these chefs. We don't want to intro their food as much or show them or put them forward because we know who they are. We've seen entire seasons of them in many cases. So we don't need to spend as much time up front in the season doing that. So it really helps that we can put the location on display. We also didn't do a quick fire. And I don't know, I'm sure there are Top Chef purists in the audience who would prefer to have a quick fire or would prefer to see that. I don't like it on shows like Drag Race. Sometimes when we don't have like a mini challenge, because it just feels fun and it's something that's light and it really gets the pace of the show going. I don't know. Did anybody have a problem not having a quick fire in light of what we got here?
No, I was glad that we got to focus on the city just for purely selfish reasons. I mean, I think one of the reasons in our show notes for the team, I wrote down all the restaurants because like literally I wanted to write down all these restaurants to make sure that I could like hit them and support them once, you know, things get a little bit back to normal here. You know, it's like the quickfire seems kind of like light and airy, but we've rarely even been in the Top Chef kitchen this season. We had the starting quickfire like immediately post Griffith Observatory, but the first challenge was on the beach. The second challenge, took place, I think, you know, completely between the restaurants, Whole Foods, and then prepping in Union Station. And even LCK, spoiler alert, didn't take place in the LCK kitchen. So we've actually seen precious little of the kitchen, and not having a quick fire, I think, helped contribute to that. I was actually fine with it.
I think to your point, Kurt, about listing out the restaurants, you did that for us here for podcasting purposes. I think that's really helpful. We'll make sure to put that in the show notes as well for this episode. If you want to, go around and check out their websites, just, you know, for the day that comes, hopefully when if you're planning a trip to LA someday and you want to go and you want to see any of the restaurants that are featured in this episode, God willing, they are open. We will have all that information up. Perhaps their websites will have information about how you can support them from a distance. So we'll make sure all of that is in the show notes. Because I do think that, and this was something that came up in my conversation with Chef Tom from a week or so back, where we were talking about how Top Chef's return is so well timed right now, like tragically so, that we are getting a show right now where every single week we're going to get to be like reacquainted with familiar faces, with people that we like to see on our TV, but also in an environment that is really stressing the importance of the food scene, of the restaurant industry at a time where its future is very, very uncertain and frankly looking fairly bleak. And to have this episode specifically that is a very specific celebration of the restaurant and not like the Michelin starred restaurant, you know, not like the five starred restaurant, but the holes in the wall that are
the food truck.
Yeah. Yeah. The food truck, like, and to really celebrate a tremendous force in that industry who is no longer with us in Jonathan Gold to have his work on full display in this episode. I thought it was a very, very touching tribute. Again, I think just like incredibly timed, sadly incredibly timed. And we'll make sure that we've got the right information in the show notes so you can look at it right now and Google around and, check out what these people checked out and see if there's anything you can do to help.
Yeah, I was wondering just from the sense of timing, like part of me is like, it's great to have this now because it's showing like, you know, it's highlighting the importance of restaurants to an area's culture and highlighting like right now you sense how that is being hit. And like part of me wants to say, like, should they have delayed the season 3-4 weeks? Like, do you want some of these, an episode like this hitting once, you know, hopefully things get back to normal and it, you know, could be, you know, probably not 3-4 weeks from now, but still it's like, I wish there was a way that we could like, that the show could somehow just impact things now and then. I don't know what I'm trying to communicate.
No,
here,
I think it's like, it's tough meat to chew on, Kurt. Yeah. You know, like, I think like, this isn't Strong Feelings, the podcast, but Haley, I think you're totally right. And I was feeling this week as well, especially when we got off last week. Yeah. I thought it was so much fun just like getting to nerd out with you guys, that I really strongly felt.
That we should do 2 weeks, two weeks.
Yeah. We should probably do a second podcast every week, but no, that this, talking about Top Chef and, you know, getting to watch masters of their craft go to work, in the way that you get to watch them on Top Chef is kind of therapeutic. Yeah. And again, like really well timed, really, really soothing and getting to talk about it is super fun as well. Even if it's like, yeah, man, I wish that like this was on at a time where like now I could go to the restaurants. I think it's almost, it's certainly not better, but it's powerful in its own way as a reminder of like what we're staying indoors for, what we're fighting for, you know, what we're trying to do here to bring the world back to either a sense of normal or whatever the new normal is going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I checked several of these to see if they delivered and to me out here in Woodland Hills and none of them did. It feels
all right. So they're closed. Cancel them is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It just feels irresponsible of me to drive across town to go. I don't know if that's the right feeling I should have.
Right.
But it's like even yesterday I was just walking around my neighborhood to get some air and there was a Korean barbecue taco burrito food truck right behind my apartment. And there was like a line of people there. It's like, I really wanted to stop, but I didn't think it was a good idea. Not because of like, I didn't have any concerns about the safety of the food.
Right.
But the people. Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. It's like, you don't want to be in a line queuing up for a food truck right now. I was glad to see that it had business though. So yeah, it's a
complicated,
interesting times that, yeah, it's complicated. Interesting times that we live in.
Yeah.
I think it's hard just from a standpoint of us being such big food fans to watch an entire industry flatline and to feel like our hands are tied. So like, what are the small things we can do to kind of support these people, especially in this episode where you see so many of the owners and it really humanizes a lot of restaurants, especially Holes in the Walls, where like you don't necessarily stop to think about the people that are in there like because they're not a Top Chef name. But watching them get so emotional, being like, Jonathan Gold really put us on the map and we're so grateful for having had the coverage from him and he was so lovely. And it's just like, oh, and now all of you guys are going to go under. Like, what do I do? Like, how do I help?
Yeah.
So
I am trying to hit, I already know where I'm going. There's a local Chinese place I've not been to that's on my walking route that I'm going to pick up lunch from today. So I think there's little things we can do like that in our area. And I think I know Haley's seen, you know, Brooke Williamson's posts about how her restaurant's like Playa Provisions is still available for takeout. And she's, you know, kind of special menus. And so I think there's things you can do to support restaurants in your immediate area. So I think there's that. And then, you know, there's always the chance to opt. You could always, many of them are offering, you know, we can buy gift cards or gift certificates or what have you online to support them. Lots of industries that have shut down, not just restaurants, are doing that. So there are ways that you can support, either donating or directly supporting.
You can also go to the website, and this is not sponsored content because I can't be bought, but you can go to the website.
Please send me money. I love
it. We heard what you want to do with this.
Yeah, I love
on the balcony.
I am not a fancy lawyer like Antonio.
I didn't want to say that I wanted to do that, Josh. Yeah. I said they should do it. You can go to the website Goldbelly. I've seen a lot of people, Shirley Chung, for example, they'll ship their food. You can get their food specifically. Curry, have you done it?
I just got a Guild Belly order yesterday.
What is your belly gilded with, Kurt?
I bought some baked brie from Elegant Brie, I believe, in San Francisco. One is a cranberry, pecan, and brown sugar brie. Whoa. And the other is a bacon, scallion, garlic, and blue cheese brie.
That sounds like hard to believe.
Bravery. Yeah.
Oh. What, was that a cheesy joke?
I can barely Kevin Bear your humor.
Wow.
That was, I thought it was pretty Gouda.
Yeah, Gold Belly is an amazing site, especially since
the mozzarella
belly with two L's. It used to just be one. But no, yeah, it's there's so much good stuff there.
And if you can, if it's your first order, I think you can get a pretty good coupon or discount. Yeah. They'll ship it very quickly. They know what they're doing when they're shipping with the site. So it's not something that's just sort of done willy nilly. Like, they have a real plan with dry ice or anything that you need to make sure the food gets to you in a proper time and way.
Have a fox looking at Gold Belly now.
I am also looking at it.
So we're podcasting here, but if you guys want to take five and just place some orders, do it privately so you don't accidentally reveal your credit card number.
I don't know if I'd order chowder on this.
I don't know.
Chowder.
Maybe
chowder.
Like, I got the Magnolia Bakery's banana pudding from there before, and every year for my birthday, there's a different delicious pies, I think it's called. I get a steak Gruyere and onion pie. That's amazing.
There's ways to support the industry right now.
Yeah. Long story short, sorry.
I do think it's just important to stress, because I think that, it's fun getting on here, and we're going to talk about the absolutely nightmarish way that Angelo Sosa says the word turmeric. We're going to take time to get into that kind of stuff. But I think it's important in an episode that is so steeped in restaurant culture and the work of important, food critics who are having to find ways to reinvent their craft a little bit right now, as everything is moving digitally and as everybody's moving digitally, to at least meditate on that and all the ways that you can continue to not just celebrate it, but support it. I think some good suggestions here, some Gouda suggestions as well. But maybe we should talk about the episode.
There was a show.
This was just our Saturday morning hangout.
Love you guys.
I want to get the logistics of the show. So the way that I think this is approached, I'm just thinking, because you have 101 restaurants from 2017, so some of them may not still be open. My assumption is that production divided the area into four regions, picked three restaurants from each region, but then they had to basically say who's going to go to each region, but the restaurants were pre-selected. That's probably what happened, right? You thinking?
I was wondering how they were divided into teams. Was it like a them choosing? Did production choose? That didn't seem especially great.
I assume they got to self-select, but to have clearance for cameras and to have unless they gave one of the Bryans, the dad team, one of them had the Top Chef credit card. I figured they had to arrange, the meals kind of ahead of time so they know things were coming.
Yeah, the restaurant seemed empty too.
Exactly.
There was nobody else there.
It seemed like a 9 a.m. Szechuan trip.
It was filmed live today. So I'm assuming that production, and plus those people were attending the actual event at Union Station, the people at the restaurant. So my assumption is that that production divided the list into four groups, but probably three restaurants in each group, but they got to select by region. I don't know if they knew ahead of time what the restaurants were. But at least they kind of were able to guarantee there was a range of types of cuisine that the chefs got to experience, which would impact, obviously, then a range of,
what they could cook. What they would end up doing. I wanted to. Those tacos looked so good from the taco truck.
I went to the Gorilla Tacos website as well, and I was like, I want stuff.
Oh, it looked really, really, really good.
Is that real gorilla?
Yes, authentic.
It's cloned, so you don't have to feel so bad about it.
That's good.
Wow.
Haley, was there anything that stood out to you that we saw from the restaurants that you wanted to try?
Everything, everything that came up, I was like, that looks great. That looks fantastic. Can I try that? Mm-hmm. It was just because we saw such a wide variety of things. It was just, I just wanted everything.
I know. Yeah, the Ethiopian restaurant looked amazing.
Oh, yeah. The very first restaurant, I think, that they that the East LA team went to Chengdu Taste. You know, back in Chicago, my buddy Bryce and I would always, there was a Chengdu Impression was a restaurant that I really, really liked.
Yeah.
And I've been looking for something that has a similar Szechuan cuisine here, like near me.
You like that numb tongue.
Oh gosh, yeah. They have this like twice cooked pork belly. Yeah. So that's definitely on my list of places to hit up. It's pretty far from me. Yeah. You know, when things change, I think that's literally at the top of my list of where I'll be visiting.
Yeah, I gotta say, like, I really do think that they picked their own groups and got to pick where they wanted to go. I loved seeing Melissa go to East LA, where she's from. It really felt like a hometown visit, a hometown date, if you will. and you could tell how much it meant to her, and to go right away to Chengdu Taste for her to see Chinese culture highlighted so much for her, I think was pretty wonderful. I love the story we're getting from Melissa. We're seeing her more in these two episodes than I feel like we did in the first 10 episodes of Top Chef Boston, which I think was an absolute disservice to her in that season. I think she's so wonderful. She has this great personality and a really unique outlook on food and what it should be. And I love seeing her, and I love this little storyline. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the amount of Melissa we're getting. I think she's really come out of her shell since her first season. I think even at the end of Top Chef Boston, like, she was starting to become so much more of a presence. And I like that momentum seems to be carrying forward. Although I was very worried for her in this episode.
Because we got so much Melissa content?
Well, not even
King
that.
Content.
We got like the, Tom took like the huge bite of pepper and he was like, yo.
Oh yeah,
he's such a baby. Like,
oh no.
Such a baby.
Is no spice too spicy for you, Uncle Tonio?
I mean, I wouldn't say no spice too spicy, but I really doubt it was that serious of a violation. Some of that, I think, is editing, too. The edit of this episode was very interesting to me, and I don't want to, you know, it becomes more clear on the rewatch, right, that you're saying, oh, now we're getting this content, or we're hearing about this chef when they're shopping. We're really not hearing about much else other than the people who are on the bottom. And there were even some people whose dishes didn't seem to do well. Brian really got called out, I feel like, for example. Brian Malarkey got called out for his malarkey specifically, but he wasn't on the bottom. So I don't know. I just feel like we have a lot of chefs that we have to show, and they're all really talented. So it was hard to say. We just didn't get a ton of content from every one of the chefs. And so it was a little concerning when we did get some content from people like Melissa, but it was all just a fake out.
Yeah.
I think my favorite point, though, is when Eric was talking about his dish and saying there's not a lot of people can do what I do. And Tom says, well, there's a lot of women in East Africa who would disagree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a cocky move by him.
Very, very sassy, though, Tom Colicchio. Like, anytime he walks away from someone, he'll always just like kind of have like that Tom Colicchio smirk. Like, okay. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh God, do you like me? Do you hate me? Like, where do I sit with you, Tom Colicchio?
I do think that the Melissa spice thing was like a legitimate thing. It wasn't because, you know, Ruth had the same comment, and they even went back to Melissa saying, and because of the structure of the challenge, she was able to, before Gail and Padma got there, she was able to kind of go in, readjust the flavor profile or the spice levels, and balance things out a bit. So I think that potentially, you know, did save her. And plus, you know, she commented that, was it her and Angela or her and Brian that were both doing tartars?
Brian.
Okay, that's right.
And I believe somebody said that she had the better tartar, so that made me feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things we sometimes will get that where you'll see, you know, where people have a wide range of things that they can choose to cook. But when they get down to it, and if they're using like the same, you know, key protein or the same, you know, main idea, it's really going to be a comparison challenge, and one of them is going to do much better.
Emily Fox, how triggered were you when you saw Brian Malarkey's like batch of fermented egg yolks? You with your egg allergy, because it was a pretty alarming sight for me.
I mean,
he has this tub of like dark viscous liquid with like fermented egg yolks,
and he's like,
there.
"Woohoo, here we go!" And
I was like, "Oh God,
you can't." I don't know, you can't put that together and not have me at least fringe a little bit. Plus, his final plating, I was like, "Whoa."
Yeah, when they showed the picture of Malarkey's plate, like when they like always do the cutaway to like the photograph of the food, and there was just like splotches of pink everywhere. It's like, oh God,
yeah,
someone died on this plate.
It wasn't very pretty. I think he probably thought it was way more artistic. You know, it's one of those people who thinks their farts don't smell.
Whoa. After eating fermented egg milk, I cannot imagine that to be the case.
I feel seen.
He even told Padma. Oh, no. He even told Padma and Gale, your mind's gonna be blown. And Padma's look on her face was like, "Oh, right, sure."
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that just sounds like a date that's about to go south.
Yeah. Oh, hopefully not.
Oh dear.
Yeah. That's bad.
Anyway,
who wants to get us back on track? I digress.
Not me.
Yeah.
Soup in a let's talk soup in a bag. I could use some soup in a bag.
Bag soup. Bag of soup is like
it's a drag queen, right?
Is that right?
Taking sips of coffee at the wrong time.
Yeah. Bag of soup.
UK season two.
Yes.
I was in Thailand a year ago, and bag of soup was relatively common. That you could go on the streets, like you go into like little like street markets of people just like serving stuff up. You get bag of soup.
I think I would absolutely.
Yeah. Well, tons of people were, and I think like the Americanization of bag of soup could be fun. And maybe now is the wrong time, but like maybe we can. Eventually.
I feel like this is the perfect time for a bag of soup. You can just leave it on the porch.
That's sealed off. Yeah, we're fine.
What about a bag of milk? Haley, isn't that a thing?
Yes, it is. It is a thing.
More food in bags, I think, is the answer here.
Bag of food.
Yeah. Bag of milk is not that strange. Just keep your milk fresh, okay?
The bag of soup was interesting. I didn't think it was all that unusual. The parm dumplings didn't really look like dumplings. They didn't even look like what I would have thought was something like nudie or something like that. They just looked like squares of cheese, which was a little odd to me. But I thought Nini's inspiration from that and the way she melted all three, I thought that was really, really intelligent stuff. And it was really cool to see that it worked so well put all those three things together.
I love the play on matzo ball soup with ball soup. That's just like a fun wordplay that I can get behind. It really did sound delicious.
They don't really serve matzo ball soups at Briss's.
Good to know. Yeah. Good to know. That's not a typical Briss.
Oh, sorry. That was from off the podcast.
Yeah. And I feel like not many of the people tried to combine a couple of the restaurants in one, and if they did, they didn't do it quite as successfully and as apparently than Nini did. Like, I feel like Lisa used Chili's as a through line for all of the restaurants, but I feel like that wasn't as like component-y as Nini's was. Does that make sense?
I was not surprised by the top three as three people who kind of seemed to really get the challenge. But of course, you know, it was edited so that we saw them, you know, voicing that they got it, because, you know, Nini, you know, kind of blended, you know, her experience together. We saw Kevin talking about how that, you know, the spirit of the challenge isn't to, you know, recreate one of these dishes. This is like, he's like, this is a great dish, but this is this restaurant's dish. What does it inspire within me? And then even, you know, Brian Voltaggio was saying something along the lines of like he'd never made used like this, was it the roasted eggplant puree before, but he was inspired by it, and so he didn't know a lot about Filipino cuisine, but eating at the restaurants inspired him to want to learn more. And so even though he's never cooked Filipino cuisine before, it made him want to try it, which I think really was the sentiment that Jonathan Gold would have wanted his readers to embrace. So I think between those three, I was not at all surprised to see them at the top.
Antonio, were you, did you read Jonathan Gold when Jonathan Gold was writing?
It's funny. I did a little bit when he passed away. It's no secret. I'm a huge fan of the podcast Doughboys, where they review chain restaurants and do it with sort of open eyes and just in an honest way, not in a diss track kind of way. And they live in LA. And I messaged them and said, hey, you know, I think what you guys should do on your Patreon episodes is go to a few of these restaurants and highlight them. And I got a message back that basically said, like, this is a great idea, but we are very lazy and it's very unlikely to happen. And so I really like the Top Chef Chef went out of their way to do this. And I would really like a copy of that magazine if anyone knows where I can pick one up, because I had read him in the past. And it was what I think it emerged in this episode, and there's certainly a discussion of it. And by the way, his editor, super harsh judging from his editor, considering that Jonathan Gold himself was more of a celebrator of food and less of a critic, and almost really in no ways a critic. The fact that she was so harsh in some of her commentary was very striking to me and hilarious. I think it was a really good way to do this, and you could see the love of food spread. It's interesting to me, and I don't mean to bring a pall over the proceedings here, but the Top Chef hasn't done a similar thing with Anthony Bourdain or a similar discussion on that level, because there's, I think, maybe different approach, but kindred spirits in terms of the embrace of all levels and the food's relation to culture and all of that in the way both of those two looked at food. So I think in many ways, sort of a backdoor tribute to that style of food, I wouldn't say even criticism, just food writing, and for people that really had an impact like Jonathan Gold did. You could just see it in the room and in the people that they went to, like you guys were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Emily, did you have any encounters with his writing?
Yeah, and I remember when he passed away, reading a lot about him and just the effect he'd had on so many different restaurants, just like this, basically. And I love how they even talk about his profile being up on the wall, where they're like, oh, the hat, it was so iconic. And, you know, seeing, you know, this guy with a mustache, you know, it's him. And
that Hitchcockian silhouette.
Yeah,
right, Antonio?
Yeah.
I know you're doing it.
I think it was the chef from Broken Spanish who was like, you saw him, like you couldn't miss him. He was probably the only like most recognizable critic to show up.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people do like to do this on the DL. Like, they don't want to be seen. They don't want to have their face put on to an article. They want to remain semi-anonymous, I think.
Who is it in the New York Times?
Pete Wells
yeah. Is often in interviews he's done, he stresses the importance of that. He goes with a false name.
Right.
He really doesn't want to be recognized. He doesn't want any special treatment.
Yeah. But he also reviews things entirely differently than Jonathan Gold did.
Like, right. He does the slam reviews. Yeah. He does like at least one a year. Yeah. He drags a big slam.
Peter Luger.
No friend of Guy Fieri's.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, is he the one who slammed Guy Fieri?
I think he rocked. Guy Fieri's restaurant, which I went to on opening day.
Yeah, you did.
It was not good, but it was a blast. It was not.
You know what? That's the style, right? Like, nobody's going there
across the street. So
I literally it was back when I was working at MTV, and the Viacom building was directly across the street from Guy's American Kitchen, I think is what it was called.
American Bar and Grill.
American Bar and Grill. Yeah, we had the Guy Italian nachos. They were.
Did you try the donkey sauce?
I'm sure I had to. I can't imagine. I'm so glad I'm allergic to eggs
because of that. Like, no thanks.
The Guy Italian nachos was like fried strips of lasagna, and like all of the workings were like an Italian conceit. It's like, I mean, it sounds gluttonous and disgusting, but also, you know, if you do that flavor profile right, it could be quite tasty. I don't remember being mad at it.
I think he had a restaurant on the last cruise ship I went on a couple years ago. Like, it was, but it was like one of those like poolside ones where you get to sit in line and you got a burger.
I mean, you can get a Fieri burger at the Burbank Airport. I'll tell you that.
There you go.
Don't do it, but you can. Anyway, we digress.
That restaurant closed. I mean, obviously it's not in operation currently, but is it shut down permanently?
Yeah.
The one in
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone. That's gone.
That's gone.
It didn't make it very far. I think it made it maybe a couple years.
A little bit longer.
This is a totally separate podcast, but Guy Fieri gets a bum rap. I love Triple D. I think Diners, Drive-Ins and Dives is one of my all time favorite shows. I would do a Triple D rewatch, and that would be an incredible podcast.
Because I love Guy Fieri. That is something Ethan and I watched, I'd say, every single day.
Yeah.
That and Guy's Grocery Games.
Oh, cool. And so once Top Chef is done, we'll just boot up the Triple D rewatch here.
Honestly, if there's a way for me to share my DVR of like trash food shows that we watch, I would.
Yeah.
Turnaround Champions. Great. We're having a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you watch this last episode?
It doesn't air till Sundays here.
Okay, that won't spoil.
The food network is like, everything is so weird here in Canada. It's just like the same, but like slightly off.
Well, it's a higher altitude, so things have to cook longer. So you don't get it until Sunday.
I do think that's scientifically how it works.
Yeah.
I think I'm pretty low, honestly.
Okay,
us in the Great Lakes wasteland or whatever it's called. it's time for our mid-podcast snack break. In the meantime, listen to a word from our sponsors.
How do we get this far without having talked about your boy Antonio Kevin, who is the winner of the challenge and also gets like the big emotional content this week, because he's getting to articulate to us, the people who have not followed his story so closely, perhaps in the audience, what he's been through recently. I know you could catch us up on what he's been through. Based on your following of Chef Kevin, you must have been very happy to see him perform so well.
I was happy to see him perform so well, especially after last week. It was for my draft team, not the best week, obviously, since my second pick was
Heisenberg.
It was tough. And I think not only is Kevin somebody who has had a lot of rainfall into his life recently, like many of us had, but he's very, I guess, emotional or just honest and vulnerable about a lot of what's going on in his life. And he seems to have faced it with eyes pretty wide open. And that's inspiring in a lot of ways. Obviously, Top Chef and the Top Chef community has had others suffer and not have the uplifting part of the story that Kevin is currently in. And obviously, when you have suffered from cancer, things can go south pretty quickly or change. When you get cancer and it's in remission, it's just in remission. You don't always just say, you often don't say it's over and I'm never going to deal with it again. You get it. You live with the idea of it for the rest of your life, if not the practical reality of the possibility of continuing to get tested and it coming back and things like that. So he's at an interesting part of his journey to be coming onto this season of Top Chef, and to see the emotion of that, to prove to myself that I'm not dying, is his line. And of course, we're all dying, but we know exactly what he means when he says right. that.
That's really powerful.
Yeah, a really powerful way to put it, and just a really inspirational story. Certainly something that we can, I think, all point to right now and say that sort of strength is inspiring. His sense of gratitude is very real, and the personal connection that he had with the food was very real. He talked about that. So it's really nice to see the way that he turned around and won this challenge, especially, I think, Haley, you're talking earlier about how Melissa, for example, uses chili as a through line, where Nini is able to use the inspiration from a lot of the restaurants and really carry that through into one dish. I didn't think every chef was successful with that, obviously. Some chefs tried to do sort of a watered down version of something that they'd had, or a very near copy. And Kevin early in the episode says, I don't think Jonathan would want you to do someone else's dish. I think he would want you to understand why the dish was what it was, why it worked, not to replicate it, but understand what makes it. And I think that's what really came through with what Kevin did this episode, and really where Kevin is at in his life in terms of understanding not just why what to cook, but why to cook it. And seeing that story in one episode, and hopefully now seeing it through the rest of the season, very, very powerful stuff. So good stuff from Kevin, for sure. On the flip side of that, Angelo is obviously cooking for his own reasons, and they're difficult, but it was very disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, he gets... It's, so Mike Bloom, who obviously is not here on the podcast today, could not make it again, had said he had a couple of comments for the podcast. One is that he has posted his exit interview with Angelo Sosa, which I had said to the judges table before we came on here. The headline is Top Chef All-Stars LA. Angelo Sosa doesn't get the gold. And I just read it quickly and I thought it said Angelo Sosa doesn't look so good.
And I don't even know how that came
out. I don't know. I just read it wrong. I must have combined some words.
I mean, he looks fine in the picture.
He looks great in the picture. He's looking great in the picture. So if you want to check that out, we'll link to that in the show notes as well. The exit interview with Angelo, which Mike teases, his answers are the most Angelo thing. So if you like Angelo's style, you should like the interview.
Every answer is turmeric.
And then Mike also said Ruth Reichel might be the harshest judge we've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And Ruth's comment to Angelo is that tuna died for nothing.
No, it died in vain. Which I don't even remember whose face we saw, but it was just like,
So hardcore. Yeah. What a hardcore thing.
Pack your knives and stab your heart.
Yeah. Unpack your knives and do whatever. I mean, that was tough.
I think Angelo held up well to that comment. Poor Angelo. I feel like he lives in his own little world, and I think maybe that was kind of his downfall in these two episodes, because I feel like we saw it this week and last week, where he had an idea and like that's what he was going to do. It didn't really matter if it fell within the parameters of the challenge or made sense for the challenge. Poor Angela.
Let's also talk about Stephanie, though.
You know what, Stephanie, and I love Stephanie. I'm a huge defender of Stephanie. I think she made a huge mistake, and she did.
And like she recognized it at the wrong time. Yeah. I think like it dawned on
when she was serving like, an Indian nacho to the Indian judge. Like,
and then she's like, "Oh shit!"
Yeah,
instant reaction. The wave of panic rushed over her. You could actually pinpoint the moment where it's hard.
Yeah, she's like, "Oh no!"
Wait, she's like, "Oh god, I'm in trouble." That's the example of what Antonio was saying about a watered down dish that didn't have to be that way, or she was trying to recreate something that wasn't not within her realm or abilities, but it's just like it wasn't what she does. And I feel like she could have easily taken some inspiration from an Indian dish to make something that shows who she is rather than making an Indian nacho, which I don't know if any of us are asking for.
I mean, if it's good, I would
eat. You know what? That's wrong. I want like non bread all the time. I don't
Italian
care.
Nacho. Like, I'll give it a go.
But it's just, it didn't. For Stephanie to have made an Indian nacho, I was like, that doesn't feel like Stephanie. I think that is a huge mistake, especially in this season.
And I think that they talked about how there were components of it that Stephanie, just as somebody who is inexperienced in this realm, wasn't even considering. Like Padma immediately knows like what you would want, what you would need for this to improve. Is like, there's, you know, we want some chutney in here. Like there's just like all sorts of stuff that like she's saying, like, this is just, it was a fail. And so it's like, you know, points for, always like points for swinging on this show. But
in a season like this, you can't miss. There's no missing.
And you have to like be
the margins are like tiny. Razor thin.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to, if you're going to swing that hard, like you have to like feel like you're going to
knock it out of the park.
Or, like you have to have like real thought and analysis behind that choice. And it felt like there wasn't a lot of that with Stephanie on this one.
And it's almost like she realized that 1 second too late. It was almost like if she'd come to that realization sooner, I almost got the sense that she would have been saying, well, you know, if I commit to this, I'm going to bring, you know, 110%. And it's almost like you should be doing that anyway. And so it does feel a little bit like she sleptwalked through this dish.
She didn't even know what it was when she was presenting it to the judges. Padma was the one who said, oh, it's like an Indian nacho. And like, she's like, yeah, I guess so. Like, it's like, she didn't even know what it was
trying
to serve judges. And I get Stephanie in a way that I don't feel like I maybe understand some of the other people. Like I understand like trying and like getting in your head and just trying to make this happen and then forgetting about what the judges say. Like food is supposed to be delicious. Like we don't have to get that technical with these things.
Yeah.
And it's not a good season for flatbreads between
This is the fall of the flatbread.
Underreported.
2 weeks running.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that, you know, Angela is the one who goes because like I guess like the turmeric coconut broth.
They're like, we got rid of it. He's gonna start saying other spices soon.
Yeah, we got it for our reputation's sake. We need to chop Angela.
He was so shocked too, which was surprising to me. Like watching it, it felt very clear that Eric and Stephanie may not have had great dishes, but I don't think in any scenario they're cutting Eric this early. I don't care if he has the worst dish. I don't think they're cutting him this early. Stephanie, I feel like, could have gone, but I think almost what saved Stephanie was that she understood what she did wrong.
Totally, that's it.
Where Angelo had almost zero clue it was not a good dish.
Angela like walked away from the dish being like, no, it came out the way that I wanted it to come out. And so everyone's like, cool, so you wanted it to be a dessert tuna.
Do we put any blame on Jen Carroll for this? They tried to make us feel like it was her fault.
I know. I was wondering about that.
I had that as a question too. Is like, did she like she gave him like the something's off face. Going back to my notes here,
she said it needed more sour, but she told him it needed more spice. But I don't think anything could have saved that dish. And like, I'm it's a competition. Like,
I'm here for Jen Carroll.
Would I be shady? Probably not. But like, do I love Jen Carroll doing this? Yes. Yeah. Did I think it was unfair for them to like pander her as Angela was getting eliminated? Like, no, like she didn't make that dish. Like, she's not on his team. Like, I don't know. Like, she's not, if it was on a team challenge, I think she has the responsibility to actually tell him what it is that he needs. But in an individual one, like, if you think that's what the issue is, then like, okay, then you follow your heart.
It is very player dependent though, because like I kind of live for that with Jen Carroll. Like,
but that's what we expect from Jen Carroll, right? Like, that's what she's here for. That's what we want from Jen Carroll. Like,
Antonio, in your notes for the draft that we did that you couldn't attend, like, you were talking about, like, the legendary, like, drunken Jen Carroll ranting. Like, you know, like, that. Like, I want that spice from Jen Carroll. And if that, like, manifests in the form of her, like, taking hits out on her fellow chef testants, like, you know, I think I might be here
She's
for
like,
it.
She's like, yeah, a little more spice in that. Yeah. Nothing will save this.
My favorite thing about Jen wasn't that, though. It was that while they were going around to the tastings, she had a bright yellow sweater on that just said everything on it.
It's like she pulled that sweater out of her like teen daughter's closet. Like, yeah, this is it for me. Yeah.
Everything.
I'm surprised it wasn't like a crop top. she wasn't wearing like platform sneakers.
I would like to know where Jen acquired that sweater. So if she's listening or anyone connected to her, please let us know.
Yeah, we'll come on to the next podcast for our $5,000 patrons with our yellow everything sweaters on that you can see if you give us that money and then take a trip to the balcony, according to Antonio.
Indeed, defenestrate yourself.
Yeah. Should I go put mine on right now?
Yeah, Kurt, if you got it.
As Kurt reveals,
I don't own anything in yellow because it's not great with my skin tone.
Emily, you rock the mustard shoes.
Yeah, I used to have mustard shoes that I loved. And I
French's?
No. I didn't know they were a French color. They're the French mustard.
My Colonel Mustard shoes, but yeah. I wore them into the ground. It was like a year of wearing them in New York, and I just destroyed them.
You wore them all the time. They were great. Yeah. They were
nice. Great.
Emily likes the yellow.
I like a pop of mustard.
You have a sweater that I love that is like very Captain Kirk gold.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Look like you're the captain of the star, which you are, of course, around these parts.
I love the mustard trend. I wish I could pull it off, but I just know in my heart I cannot.
Fox has it on.
I feel like shoes. I could do that though. Mm-hmm. I feel like shoes.
They were great shoes. Look into them. They were awesome. They were really great. I tried them on. They didn't look so good on me.
Mustard shoes.
Mustard shoes.
Right into the Google.
In terms of people like being like kind of like set up antagonistically to some degree, do we want to talk about Lisa and Eric with like the duck? Because like that felt like, obviously I don't actually have the memories of Lisa from her season, but from what we've discussed of like what her reputation was coming out of that season and now coming into this, like did it feel like sort of like shades of that, of like Lisa going for the duck and Eric not being like thrilled about that? Are they like, is there an early setup of like Lisa in an adversarial way?
I would say it's would be unfair to say like Lisa was doing some shady stuff, because I don't think her and Eric had a conversation, at least one that we saw, where Eric was like, I'm doing something with duck, what a great idea, and then Lisa was like, oh, interesting,
right
like it's just that, right. She got to the counter first, like that's just the way it is. That's Top Chef. You go to the grocery market and they don't have anything, and got to figure something else out,
and they happen to be serving 200 people, and so she needed all the ducks. And if anything, she probably
everything she
did Eric a favor, because the chefs seem very, you know, anti cooking something that's too similar to what somebody else is cooking. And sure, having a duck base may not have just been, you know,
hard to be doing Eric a favor on this one, considering where he landed.
Well, that was his fault, Josh.
Yes.
Everybody knows the classic combination of scallops and cabbage.
Wow.
I know, he's on my team, and I was like,
undercooked cabbage.
Underreported allergy for Emily Fox, the scallops.
Same.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to say cabbage. I'm like,
I can't eat scallops.
I thought you were too, actually. Yeah, I can't eat scallops. It's not fun.
I know. I loved scallops, and now I cannot consume them.
I think I discovered this week I'm allergic to kale.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
What happened?
You don't want to know.
Oh, dear.
All right. Those are for our $7,000 patrons.
That's for Top Chef After Dark.
Oh, God. Oh my gosh.
And there seemed to be issues with like the consistency of the cabbage too.
Yeah, that was, I think, the main issue.
And Eric seemed to be fine with it, right? Like, so like another difference of opinion there in terms of Eric's reaction to what the judges were putting down.
I don't think I would mind a little crunch in the cabbage. Sure. Sometimes I feel like cabbage, especially when it's cooked down, is just not my jam. So I feel like if there was a little bit of a crispness to it, I think I would like it more, but who am I?
They were talking about like the crawfish powder, right? Was that something?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know how that, like, what is that necessarily?
And there seem to be several issues. Eric's inclusive of the dishes. And there's a lot of different metaphors they were used about. Like, you had these two, you had this ingredient, this ingredient. They weren't talking to each other. And you needed something to get them to communicate better. And they were just both there, but not commingling. And there was a lot of that with several dishes. I think Eric's was one of them, specifically that's called that.
I still didn't think Eric stood much of a chance of going home because it felt like Stephanie and Angelo's sins were greater. Stephanie's in terms of just the cohesiveness and just the entire idea of her dish, and Angelo's in terms of what was going on there. So it never felt to me like Eric was in danger, and it felt to me like it was either going to be a Stephanie or Angelo thing. And I was ultimately surprised that Angelo went, mainly because Padma had stood up and said she liked the way the tuna was in Angelo. Dish. It just seemed like Tom and especially the guest judge felt much more harshly about everything there in Angelo's world than they did for Stephanie. So, I mean, I don't think we have a lot to, didn't seem like it wasn't a huge gag. Like, oh, I cannot believe Angelo went home over Stephanie. It felt like both of them. I know that there's a discussion that we've had and they've had on the show that we're talking about fine margins here. But in at least in the case of all three of these, it didn't feel like any of these three were really successful dishes.
Yeah.
I was surprised that Ryan Malarkey was not in the bottom, only based on the commentary. It didn't seem like it was a bad dish, but it was kind of, this is a show-off dish. And I can't remember how it specifically was phrased, but it was like, this is why people who don't like
restaurants,
restaurants because of dishes like this, because they're too show-offy.
Yeah.
So that was, I was wondering, but apparently it didn't taste, it was just like too much. It tasted good.
Was that the dish that was described as twee?
Yeah.
Or was that a different one?
I think that was Angelo's.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Like a Wes Anderson dish.
Yeah, and yeah, the at the judge's table, they talked about Angelo's dish as twee. Brian's was show off. That was the one where he had said, prepare to be blown away, ladies. And Padma was not impressed.
Never say that. Like, just
that's a funny thing. Like, here's my tip
for downhill. Like, here's my tip for any gentleman in our listening audience. Don't ever say prepare to be blown away to anyone else.
And referring to women as ladies is often going to come off as condescending regardless.
Yeah. Prepare to be blown away, ladies. It's like, I will not know. I refuse. Thank you.
Get out of here. Get out of here, malarkey.
That's a bunch of malarkey. So it's Last Chance Kitchen. Should we talk Last Chance Kitchen?
Do you want to start us off, Josh? What do you think about the episode of Last Chance Kitchen
we all watched? It's Angelo versus Joe, and Tom Colicchio says, all right, guys. Well, so it's you two versus each other here in Last Chance Kitchen.
What was the challenge, Josh?
The challenge was some challenge that resulted in Angelo cooking scrambled eggs with caviar and yuzu cream, and Joe cooking a grilled gooey duck with cultist puree. And that was
cultist.
It's for cultists. And since he played to the crowd with the cultists who were the guest judges of the Last Chance Kitchen, Joe won. And they also had there was a ninja battle at one point, I believe.
Yeah. Allow me to expand on what Josh has said here. So we now have moved away from Hidden Valley Ranch as a sponsor to BMW as a sponsor.
That feels very different.
Yeah.
They're going to have to cook BMW at some point this season, which I can't wait for.
A BMW.
Yeah. Yes. And apparently what this means is that instead of, cooking in Last Chance Kitchen with Hidden Valley Ranch ingredients, you're all going to leave Last Chance Kitchen and BMW and go to a restaurant somewhere in LA. And I would actually not be upset if this was the theme throughout the season, but we see Joe and Angelo get in the BMW with chauffeur Tom, and they drive to, I have it in my notes here, they drive to
Providence.
Providence. Michael
Not the town in Rhode Island, by the
way. So they drive across country to Providence, Rhode Island.
Amazing.
It's a long trip. They head to Michael Cimarosi's restaurant, Providence, which is a seafood restaurant. And because both chefs were a little bit challenged by seafood, they are facing a seafood challenge. And Michael serves up the ingredients that they have to use for this challenge. I think they can use some other things around the kitchen as well. Obviously, scrambled eggs, they used eggs. But they were given Gouda clam, oysters, caviar, celtis, and yuzu. And they had 30 minutes.
Cultists.
Yes, the cultists. And they had 30 minutes to cook a dish using these ingredients and trying not to overcomplicate it.
And Joe.
In this other kitchen. So
Joe's the guy. I watched that happen and I was pretty happy about it.
But you know, if this is the format that, and then we see instead of like in previous LCKs, we've seen then they come back into the Last Chance Kitchen and Angela would be there and watching Joe go up the battle against whoever's next eliminated chef testin is. Here we see, Tom ask, you know, tell Angelo that, you know, you're like leaving Last Chance Kitchen. And so I don't know if this is going to be the theme for the rest of it. It's like they go to a different restaurant in LA and have some chef there kind of co-judge alongside, you know, set up the challenge and co-judge alongside Tom. I would not be upset with that. I actually liked this format as a refresh on the typical LCK format.
Question. Have we thought about calling LCK Lick for short?
Oh, no.
Emily, I don't think we have, and I think we shouldn't.
Josh, are you less likely to want to watch it if it's called Lick than Last Chance Kitchen?
Less likely.
What if it's Lock?
Good luck.
I was thinking like from a Lost perspective.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Now I'm in.
Yeah, man.
Now I'm in. No, what would Tom do this week?
Yeah.
We can tell. It doesn't look like.
Well, he didn't go to the restaurants, right? So maybe that would be a little harder for him to say how he would divine inspiration from things that he didn't do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
any thoughts on LCK, or did I really just kind of cover it there?
You got it.
I think you got it. You nailed it. What a slam dunk.
Yeah, you really did.
Well, but
really
it seemed like for something that was supposed to highlight seafood, that Angela's dish was really more about the eggs and the caviar was kind of an add-on, whereas Joe's really focused on the seafood. That's the commentary.
Tom really seemed to say that both were really good dishes. So there is that. Maybe that's what he's always going to say because you want people to go out on a high note. But he did seem to say that both were good. I don't know about the different locations. Clearly, BMW being the sponsor now, there isn't much more you can do to feature the damn thing other than have them drive around the town. But I don't know why it would be called Last Chance Kitchen. Then it should be called like Last Chance Uber Driver or something like that.
Now, my question is: Do we think that Hidden Valley Ranch is actually gone? Or just like hiding better than ever.
Just hidden, yeah.
Is it possible that Hidden Valley Ranch is there? It's just like really extra hidden in the background. And
for the right moment in Lick.
Yeah. Be like a genius level reveal when it made its stealth roll.
Yeah. The San Gabriel Hidden Valley, that's where they're going to go.
Well, but he's like, I live in the valley. So, you know, if I wish it was a sponsor because then maybe I could get some here. But I like the fact that it's traveling to different places only because, hey, this is another restaurant for me to check out. And I won't lie. Like we saw Tom enter the address. And so, of course, the nav of the BMW, I immediately hit pause and I go into Google Maps. I said, okay, what restaurant? Oh, this is probably where they're going. So, you know, it was a moment of like, you know, couch-based interactivity with the show. But if it gets us to, if it gets me to see more restaurants around LA, I'm selfishly down for it.
Yeah, it's not the worst. It's not the worst way to do it for sure. It's going to get a little unwieldy, I think, as we go on. But so much of living in California is driving, right, Kurt? So it seems it
is
seems
it driving
perfect.
Or spending time in the car?
Well, that's a good point. It's a good point. Yeah, they should have to cook in the BMW. I think Kurt, you suggested. I think that's the way to go. Do like a 15-minute challenge where you whip something together in the
car
itself.
Plug a hot plate into a cigarette lighter.
Exactly.
Stop at three different drive-thrus, pick up your ingredients, and then reformat.
Speaking of which, do you think we'll get something In-N-Out Burger related on this season of Top Chef?
Oh, man.
I am going to receive hate for this. I hope not.
Oh,
I'm not
dear.
A big In-N-Out Burger fan.
All right. Underreported. Underreported that you're not a big In-N-Out guy.
They do put fennel on every burger, so that's probably why.
Yeah. Oh,
it's actually in the patty.
Yeah, it's on the secret menu.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone's dish this week, the losing dish, Angelo, had jicama, underreported. Really love jicama. Love jicama.
Somebody has like a list of all of things you love and things you don't love. And like one day they're going to have like a Kirk Clark inspired dinner party.
Kirk Clark quickfire.
That rolls off the tongue. Yeah. That falls off the tongue. Yeah.
Right onto the floor.
I love getting. I love picking up jicama sticks from Whole Foods.
Picky sticks. That's what they call them. Yeah.
Love that. Love that jicama.
What do you dip it in? Just like a ranch? Yeah.
A puree made from more jicama. Yeah, so it's just like jicama and jicama.
You balance a blackberry on the end of it.
Exactly. It's like ants on a log, but it's like blackberries on jicama. <Yeah.
laughs> You still use the peanut butter as like the cement, though? Or?
I don't know. I have to find
the glue. It's a food glue.
I have to find that third underreported thing that can be the glue on the Sasso pizza of my jicama stick.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. A lot happening there. Yeah. I don't know how we top that. I feel like we
Is this the last time we see Jon Favreau this season, Josh?
Are you going to say this? Is this the last time we see Kirk Clark on the podcast?
God, no.
God, no. God, no. Every week. Here. Favreau, maybe. Do you watch his show on Netflix at all, Chef Show?
I think we've loosely talked about it before. I have not watched it. I know he's a big kitchen guy, and I know he's a big cooking guy.
It's him and Roy Choi in this episode too. Usually it's just Favreau talking. Roy Choi doesn't say much on Chef
Roy
Show.
Roy Choi hardly says anything, and I'm always like, let him speak.
Yeah, it's just kind of like tagging along, and Favreau's really in the limelight the whole time. Like, there's some episodes that are really good, and then other episodes that are kind of just like, all right, what am I watching right now? It just feels like very like. Kind of like acid jazz sort of food show.
That Korean Mexican taco truck that I talked about earlier was a Roy Choi.
Oh, nice.
Truck.
It was the Kogi?
Yeah.
The
Kogi barbecue food truck.
Yeah.
I've had go get in line.
Yeah. Just go get in line anyway.
Just like 6 feet back.
Worth the COVID.
Yeah, it's worth it.
I feel bad that I didn't go now.
We went to go pick up dinner from a local restaurant around here the other day. Last night, and just like driving around the town, you see lines all like outside of like all the restaurants with everyone 6 feet apart. It was pretty like weird and like magical almost. Yeah. Like it's like everyone is like, we get it. This is weird, but like we're trying our best here. Anyways, yeah. I got roasted chicken. It was delicious.
If we have any listeners in the UK who I know they love nothing more than to get in a queue, maybe this get in a queue and also not have to talk to other people about anything, especially emotions, is probably like pure bliss for anyone in the UK. So,
all right.
anyone else have anything else to say?
I thought Karen got a lot of content for somebody who wasn't on the top or the bottom. Mm-hmm. She was speaking an awful lot in this episode. If I were one of those people who wanted to read into the edit, I'd say there had to be a reason for that. She is a good narrator. She has a very unique way of speaking. And I think that it lends itself really well to the talking head. Her dumplings look great. But again, like she wasn't on the top, she wasn't on the bottom, and she had a ton of content talking about what she was doing. So the fact that she got so much content, I feel like bodes well for her as the season progresses. There are other people who were relatively absent from the episode. I would have liked to have had, for example, a better bounce back story from Leanne. I didn't feel like we got a lot of Leanne, and you'd have to really, I think pretty difficult or pretty hard, I should say, about what she actually made and talk about that. Just didn't seem to be a lot of feedback one way or the other. I think
my team is going to be first one fully knocked out. That's my prediction.
You had Sasto. Who were the other two?
Sass is gone. I have Leanne. And I've got, I think Jamie could stick around for a little while. But
he's so like, forgettable in this episode. What do you think, Chef?
I'll tell you later.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm already one down. And I like you, Antonio. I like you, Antonio, but much like you. I was pretty let down that we did not have any real focus on Leanne being like, I was so close to being the first one out. Now I got to go on a redemption kick. There was like nothing.
Yeah.
So that's not great.
And it was, from another edit standpoint, it's interesting. Just you guys were talking earlier about Lisa and the duck, and maybe it wasn't really portrayed so much as a villain move, but it was portrayed directly oppositionally to Eric. But Jamie also made duck. I don't know if he shot his out of the sky or if he acquired it in some other nefarious way.
The dog went and got it.
Woof, 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 exactly. I don't know if that's what happened, but he had duck mole taco. So maybe it's a different part of the duck, or there were different cuts that were available that he could use that Eric couldn't. But it just, again, no yeah. presentation whatsoever about James' role.
It was, the meat was mole.
Duck
and
mole.
And the sauce was duck sauce.
Yikes.
Ah, there you go.
It was duck sauce mole taco.
Oh, no wonder Tom didn't want to comment on
it. I'm surprised he didn't
get
more screen time. That was a pretty bold choice.
Yeah, really. I know you could get,
it's like a very middle of the road.
Didn't know that there was a mole foods that you could get your mole from. I didn't know that was a thing that happened.
Also underreported.
That's a really good idea, actually.
It did bug me that Ruth kept telling Kevin that he needs to bottle that butter. You don't bottle butter. I mean, you can have squeeze bottles.
You jar it, folks.
Every time she brought that up, it bugged me.
Very jarring comment.
That's got to be a catchphrase on Strong Feelings. You don't just bottle up that feeling.
You got to jar it. You jar those feelings up in there, bye.
Yeah, put it in a bag. Put it in a bag with the milk.
Oh, yeah, you just put it in the fridge and call it a day.
You jar it.
A little bit of a brogue there.
Oh, God. Kelly, I am going to be a patron of that podcast when you do that.
Strong Feelings.
Strong Feelings. I'm ready.
Break out the Newfie accent every once in a while just for funsies.
We wear like a taupe. Is that what it's called? Like wear one of those nice little hats?
A toque. What did you say? A toque?
I said a toque.
I
know where your head's at, Antonio.
No, it's a toque. Did I say toque?
Yeah, I didn't say toque.
No, you said like taupe.
I know. I took the wrong wet made.
I see what you did there.
I said toque, not toque.
We both said it incorrectly.
I think you said toque. You've been in California too long.
Yeah. That's what I was saying.
Does anybody else have any questions about Canada?
always. Emily made dumplings yesterday.
They look incredible.
Karen, and the dumpling recipe I used was on the James Beard website, and I realized it was Leanne Wong's recipe.
Whoa!
Oh,
yeah.
Also, Emily was featured in an article about bread this week.
Yeah, can we talk about that?
Let's talk about that.
Underreported.
I had like two really exciting sentences
and a photo.
Don't undersell. You got
yeah. No, this is great,
too?
Emily. Where can people find this article where you talk about the article's about how many people are baking bread now that they're self-isolating, right? And as our resident bread queen, as I called you last week, I think I called you the bread babe, but tell us more about how this happened.
Basically, we have seen an uptick in people purchasing flour, not buying shelf-stable breads because some of them are just not available right now. But it looks to me as though there is a trend of baking your own things. We call it anxiety baking in this household. And we have a really good friend.
I'm the benefactor of anxiety baking. This is one of the first times anxiety has really worked for me.
Yeah. He's doing fine.
I'm doing all right.
But yeah, so we have a really good friend who reached out to me and was like, would you love to contribute a little bit to this? And I said, absolutely. So just talked a little bit about what the process seems to be and what I'm observing in my own routine and what everyone on Twitter is saying to me, which is like, I'd love to bake if I could find some flour.
I know flour is a rarity right now. Certainly,
and for
like
those
bread
of us
flour
who
really
have been
find.
Bakers pre-COVID, I can't find any bread flour. So that's really something I never expected to see a shortage or a deficit.
We've got bread flour coming April 8th. is the ETA on when to expect our bread flour.
Yeah.
So we gotta hope it for a couple weeks.
Yeah, it was super fun. It's a cute read.
We'll put it in the show notes here too.
Yeah,
so if you want to check it out.
It's kind of like nicely uplifting considering all the other stuff that's being written around what's, you know,
happening.
Our current event. So.
And you made some dumplings this week. What else have you made?
Yeah, so I roasted a pork shoulder
this
on Monday.
This is the week of the pork shoulder.
Yeah. Ooh.
On a Monday, a pork shoulder.
Yeah, low and slow for 8 hours, just salt and pepper. That's it. So you can basically doctor that up to make whatever you want. So we ate that in tacos on Monday. Tuesday, we turned it into a ragu. Wednesday, we made nachos.
Oh, God, they were so good.
Thursday, we took a break, other than you made a pork sandwich.
Well, Emily made the sourdough bread for the New York Post article. And so I was like, well, let me just take some of that cold pork shoulder and shove it in this piece of bread.
Yeah.
So I had like a pork sandwich and very good.
And then last night, I took the rest of the shoulder, cut it up, like diced it really fine. And mixed it with ginger, garlic, scallions, soy, a little bit of mirin.
Mm. Oh my God, my mouth is watering.
I know.
Sesame oil, and made that as the filling for the dumplings. And then
nice.
Them, and then we froze a bunch of them too. So you guys ever want to do a pork shoulder, I could definitely tell you all the things that I did.
Hit up.
Yeah, that's a really great idea. I think something that's really great right now is like you say, to make one thing and then repurpose that for a lot of different things.
I also gave a quart of it to our super because he's been coming in and being a rock star, taking care of things when the rest of us are, you know, sheltering in place. So
like very solidly, like 7 meals out of it.
Yeah. Basically. So I could have had more of it, but I was like, no, this goes to Kieran because he's the man.
He's awesome. So. Yeah.
Antonio, have you made anything fun and interesting this week?
Oh, I had to try to think here. Made some lemony chicken rice soup yesterday with some dill and some oregano in an Instant Pot. So that's very Greek.
Delicious. Yeah,
I'm an Avco Lemeno guy, so that sounds right in my wheelhouse.
That's what we call you.
Needed some bread to go with it though, so I'm gonna have to step my game up here.
Hey, anytime you want to talk bread.
Yeah, direct line.
Bread for this.
Kirk, yeah, make exactly. Anything? Make anything?
I resubscribed to to Blue Apron. Other meal kits are available. So I think I made French bread pizzas and kale salad.
The French bread pizza looked really good. I'm sorry that the kale salad ruined it for you, but the French bread pizza I thought looked great.
It was good. And then the leftovers, the second time around, because, you know, each one makes two servings and I'm alone. I added like some sausage to it and a couple of some additional cheeses. And then I made a chipotle glazed meatloaf and mashed potatoes and awesome. Grilled shishito peppers.
Yeah.
And then I think sometime this weekend there's a chicken zucchini basmati rice dish that's going on. But so just tapping into the meal kit thing, getting a different one. Hopefully delivered. The delivery situation in my apartment complex is kind of wonky because we have we're on lockdown. Like we don't have a leasing office anymore, and I actually got a shipment from Imperfect Produce, and they just lifted in like the mail area with like the hundreds of mailboxes. And I just had to know to get down there and get it before it got taken by somebody. So just kind of winging a prayer that these boxes get through to me.
Hey, did you make anything cool this week?
I also actually had a meal subscription service this week. Chef's Plate, Natalie Franklin sent me a code for that. So I got a free week of that. Three meals times two for Ethan and I, which is fantastic. So one night we had steak with chimichurri. We had beef enchiladas. And then we had Japanese umami burgers. And everything was really tasty. That burger had a nice slaw on it.
No,
it was like a carrot bok choy sesame seed kind of deal, and the carrot they sent us was actually so large that we didn't use all of it in the slaw.
But I had
already grated it, and it was about three quarters of a cup of carrot. So what I did was I have the recipe and Joy of Cooking for carrot cake, and I made carrot cupcakes, and they were delicious. I think something that you should get if you are in quarantine right now or isolation is a copy of The Joy of Cooking. Order it from one of your local bookstores or something like that. A lot of your local bookstores are going to have that book.
Vigorous nodding from Uncle Tom.
Yeah, right? You know, it's funny.
I
got it for Christmas, and we had our little text chain on Christmas Day saying like, oh, what did we get food related for Christmas? And I had said that I got that. Antonio said, what a great book that is. You made that day. I can't quite remember, but it was something delicious. Honestly, that has been my most used book since that day. I pull it out anytime I can think like, oh gosh, I wonder how I do a pot roast in my slow cooker. And you pull that out and it's nice guidelines, and you can add to it. You can subtract from it. A lot of the recipes, like for this carrot cake one, it tells you like, if you want to add pineapple, here's how much to add. If you want to add raisins, here's how much to add. Here's the recipe for cream cheese frosting for it. It literally thousands of recipes. And it's not like a fancy cookbook. There's no pictures, but it is a kitchen Bible for me now. And I could not recommend getting a copy of The Joy of Cooking enough.
Yep.
There are some little drawings in there, which are very nice. But yeah, it doesn't have the full illustrations like a salt, fat, acid, heat, might that are, you know, yeah, beautiful. But what it does have, like you said, are just
everything,
so drilled
everything
down
you want.
And they, there are other, you know, you might, you, your house might have a Joy of Cooking in it already. Many do. You may have inherited one, or you, you know, your parents might have had one you were growing up. This edition that they just released is new and completely updated. That is a labor of love for the family. It started with one family, and then daughters and sons and granddaughters and grandsons, and the family has carried it on. So what this updated version has is kind of what we're eating now. So it doesn't just have your classic Joy of Cooking recipes, but it has Thai recipes, and it has recipes from all over the world that our cuisine that we're eating now in America are totally part of or influenced by, or that we have adapted into our world. So the new stuff they added is really, really cool to see. The old stuff is great. Like you, Haley, couldn't recommend it enough. And it's just a great resource, and not expensive at all for what it is, honestly.
No. Like when I had last looked at it in store, I saw it was on sale for about $30 Canadian, which is incredible for what you're getting in this book. You know, anytime you would think like, oh gosh, I'd really love to make this, so you Google the recipe. I don't do that anymore. I pull out a Joy of Cooking, and it just feels, I don't know, more connected. And yeah, you know, I've been posting a couple Joy of Cooking recipes like on my Instagram or like Instagram stories, and you know, tagging them in it, and they often respond or share or say like, this is fantastic, like thanks for sharing it. So it is very like, they are, Antonio, like you said, very connected to this book and what you're making, and they love to see what it is you're doing with this book. So get yourself a copy.
Yeah, That's a no-brainer.
Order it from your local bookstore. Yeah. They might drop it off. They might do a curbside pickup, something like that. So yeah.
Yep. And get yourself Animal Crossing. And if you get it, hit me up.
I'm thinking about getting it. I'm really thinking about buying a Switch.
Yeah.
I'm very close to the end of Death Stranding, the PlayStation
preparation for what's actually.
Ooh, yeah, no doubt. Horrible.
You play as Norman Reedus as a post-apocalyptic delivery man in a world where everybody is socially isolated from each other, and you traverse a barren wasteland.
This
where
feels
there is
bad
danger
for your anxiety, Josh.
Man, it was a real shock once this all started happening. It's like, oh, so we're living in Death Stranding. Cool. Yeah. Cool. But I'm almost done with that, and then maybe Animal Crossing, although the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Sims.
Yeah.
Because I still have a job in Sims.
You need to make a household in the Sims. Make the podcast household and put the five of us in there.
Oh my god, so cute! Okay, let me see what I can do.
And just let us run and see, like, you know, who, like, you know,
like you want to hook up with Emily on Sims? Is that what you're saying?
Hey, that's cool. That's fine. We're open. I'm open. I guess, Emily, you have to make the call. It sounds like you're not, so that's uncomfortable.
Oh my god! Now I'm going to download The Sims. I have to do it.
It's like $5 on the Origin website right now. Okay. It's on sale.
All right. So, how can people get in touch with us if they want to Venmo us $5,000 each to become one of our exclusive patrons that gets to watch us do Sim
podcast? You get an everything sweater,
live.
And
I'm at Round Howard just about everywhere you can find me.
I am at Kurt Clark with two C's, but on Venmo, I'm Kurt-Clark.com. I'm just like wondering, there's going to be like some like angel investor that just surprises me one morning. I'll be happy. But Kurt Clark on everything. <It's> like, on everything.
On everything.
I'm at AC Mazzaro on Twitter, 2Z's 1R. I don't need your money. I'll work with you if you have some cool projects, but
can't be bought.
Same. Can't be bought. You can't buy Uncle Tony.
I am at Emelet, like an omelet, but with an E, on Twitter, Venmo, Instagram, all those good things.
We also don't need your money. Please put that towards better use.
Although I don't have a job right now either, so that's super fun.
We're fine. We're doing
everything's totally fine.
Yeah. We're going to be all right.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @hstrong_, and you can check out my blog strongtakes.ca. And until next week, I will be truly and literally counting down the minutes.
I will be sitting right here with my headphones on.
Yeah. Just sitting like rocking back and forth.
This was wonderful again. It was a highlight of my week. I had I saw a couple of comments from people saying that they really love listening to this in this weird, wonderful time. So I'm glad it can be as therapeutic for you as it is for us. So just keep on listening, keep on tweeting us. Tell us what it is that you're making each week. We love seeing that.
Totally.
And until then, pack your knives and head on out, my friends.